Einen wunderschönen guten Tag, liebe Gemeinde. Hier spricht der Ingo von den Donuts und ich bin von irgendeiner Knallbirne bei End Hits Records damit beauftragt worden, einen Podcast abzuhalten in 5 Episoden, in denen wir ein bisschen die Künstler beleuchten, die bei der bevorstehenden End Hits Records Tour, die da vom 14.02. bis zum 25.02. durch ganz Deutschland und ein bisschen Österreich und Schweiz geht, die ganzen Künstler ein bisschen unter die Lupe zu nehmen. Ich bin vielleicht noch ein bisschen verpeilt, das kann sein. Ich habe erst meinen 3. Kaffee heute in mir drin, aber ich habe es zumindest schon geschafft, ein Black Flag Logo aus den Wasa-Knäckebrotstreifen zu legen auf meinem Frühstückstisch. Das ist heute schon die 3. Folge vom End Hits Records Podcast und es hat sich aber bis jetzt immer noch niemand gemeldet von Coldplay, um uns mal irgendwie einen Jingle zu schreiben. Finde ich ein bisschen schwach. Ich finde es aber schön, dass ihr alle wieder eingeschaltet habt und an alle, die jetzt zum ersten Mal einschalten, abonniert doch bitte das Ganze hier bei Spotify, Apple, Deezer oder Podcast. Und seid dabei, wenn wir rausfinden, wer so Leute sind wie Nathan Gray von Boys It's Fire, wer Matze Rossi ist, wer Norbert Buchmacher ist, wer Euse ist, der Chef von End Hits Records und jetzt hier bei mir der liebe Noam von Swain. Hey Noam, I'm gonna switch to English now, because you are, if I understand this correctly, you are a Dutch person living in Berlin, Germany, recording English-speaking songs in America. That's, you know what, that's good enough to confuse me for starters.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. That's pretty much it, yeah.
Well, good to have you on the show. And
thanks for having me.
Really thrilled to speak to you, because I love your new record. It's just fucking amazing.
Oh, thanks a lot.
But
yeah, it's good to be here, yeah.
Right on. But, I mean, we try and get to know the artists and the people behind the music in this episode of the podcast a little better. So let's start with like a newest episode of a Netflix series, previously on Swain. So please give us a quick rundown of your band history. I know you've done quite some touring in your time, had a bunch of lineup changes and whatnot. So can you put us wise to this?
Yeah, it's a bit of a long story and a bit of a complicated one, I guess. We started out under a different band name, This Routine Is Hell, in 2010, I think, roughly. We released a bunch of stuff that not a whole lot of people know, I think. And then Howl came and we started doing this, this hardcore thing, and we did a lot of tours then. Right after that, in 2015, I think, we had a guitar player that left. He started making donuts in Berlin in a vegan donut shop, which is doing quite well, so that's pretty cool. Nice. And then our bass player at the time, Boy, became the guitar player. We've recorded The Long Dark Blue in the United States with Jay Robbins. We also recorded Howl with Kurt Ballou.
Nice.
In the United States. Yeah, it was cool. Then we did a whole lot of cool tours, a bit bigger. It was less DIY and more like support shows for Touché and Modern Life is War and a bunch of other things. John Coffey from Holland. We took a little time off in 2018 to write Negative Space. And we got a bass player finally, Stefan. And then Negative Space came out this year. And we've done a few shows, but we're looking forward to 2020, where we're going to be doing a whole lot of
things. Right on. So you just mentioned Stefan. He's the only German guy in the band, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So let's talk about Berlin. How do you live these days? Like, who came up with the idea of moving to Berlin?
I think that was... Well, I moved here about 5 years ago. Our drummer and former guitar player moved here a little bit sooner. We were all, or some of us were living together in like a student situation back in Utrecht in Holland. Uh-huh. And Berlin's chill. We just wanted to do something else. And everyone just sort of like moved here sort of together, sort of separately. But we all sort of had this idea of we're just going to move to Berlin. Why not?
Right. So how often do you guys hang out per week?
Not as much as we like to, probably.
Right.
For example, like our drummer is a tour manager, so he is on the road most of the time with a lot of cool acts. So when he is in town, we do hang out more, but he's oftentimes just out of town. So that makes things a little bit difficult. And our guitar player lives in the UK right now. He's coming back in March, so hanging out's very difficult for us.
It's getting it's getting even more confusing now that you've got a guy in the UK as well.
it makes things a little more difficult.
So how do you?
But on the other hand,
how do you rehearse then? I mean, must be quite difficult to get everybody on the same page and on the same spot, right?
We don't very often, so it's just like you know, when we write an album, we write it mostly at home initially.
Right.
Me and Boy are the main songwriters, so we just demo songs. Then we go to the practice space. So like me and Boris and Stefan would practice, the three of us here in Berlin. And then Boy would come in, and then we would practice a little bit more. And then we went to the US and just recorded. Same happens. I wish we had more time, but sometimes we just don't.
Yeah.
And the same happens for touring, you know, like we got a few days before tour, and then we just get together. We practice 3 days in a row, you know, long hours. And then we just practice.
I see. Right on. Yeah. So, when the label and the promo filled me in about you guys, rumor has it that you guys are no strangers to partying a lot, which makes it kind of hard to get a hold of you guys during daytime. So,
is that true?
Well, you tell me.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's the thing that always feels like that's the thing. Maybe the vibe. I don't know. Yeah, we party, but not more so than any other band, I think. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, like, you know, when you move to Berlin, you party a lot in the beginning, but after a while, you know, clubbing and stuff and all that stuff, you've seen that, you know.
Yeah, somebody told me that there's already like a gold-plated metal sign on the wall of the Berghain with your name on it. Is that true?
No, that's not true. I don't even go to Berghain that much. I don't like how... You know what I really like about Berlin culture is like this open, tolerant, like welcome, everyone is chill and welcome situation vibe where it's chill. When you're in the queue for Berghain, it's like Berghain is chill, but it's not, well, it's cool, but it's not chill. You know what I mean?
Right,
and it's not an easy vibe for me. So that's not really something I do much more any day, not nowadays.
Right on. Did you party last night?
No, not at all. I have a job, man. I gotta go to my job and stuff.
What'd
last
you
do? Night I was playing. I have a really shitty job. I work in a call center. Although recently I got a promotion, so I don't call anymore. I just tell people what to do now. But it's still not really enjoyable for me. But I don't know, for the last 10 years, I've just been putting jobs, you know, aside so that I can do music and go on tour whenever I can, which I can with this job. So that's nice. And I work part time, so it's just a little money on the side.
Right. Right on. So cross your heart and hope to die. Is it tough for you to do this interview now in bright daylight?
No, not at all. I mean, I generally just wake up really late. Last night I was up until not even that late, but like 2 or 3. And in general, I have trouble sleeping. So I tend to live in a different time zone, basically. So
I see. Right on. Well, despite all the party, you guys get a lot done artistically. Like, it strikes me you guys are shapeshifters. Like, when you guys started out, it was a hardcore band. Like, what were your influences back in the days?
I think around the time of Howl, we were listening a lot to Painted Black, which I think might be obvious to some people.
Yeah.
and Ceremony as well, and like that kind of stuff that was, you know, pretty popular at the time. Modern Life is War was also a thing we were really into. But with Howl, we tried to write this thing that was just like one consistent sort of like one piece, you know, like all the songs, they kind of like move into each other, and it was a concept album as much as we tried to, at least.
Right on. Yeah. But well, nowadays you guys turn sort of like into a grungy kind of alternative rock pop kind of something band. Do you think that consistency and continuity is a necessity for a band? Or because, I mean, a band obviously has their corporate identity when it comes to their sound. And since you guys have been shape-shifting that much, do you think that your fans follow you on such a varied journey? Isn't it risky to, you know, change the style with every record?
It definitely is. I mean, this is something we've just been experiencing now more than anything else. From a PR perspective or from a money perspective, it's not the smart thing to do to change your style, because in reality, you know, like we're looking now at like, okay, which bands can we go on tour with now, and then maybe we won't fit the harder stuff, and so we got to find new bands that we like to go on tour with, or we have to go on a different booking agency because it makes more sense with the roster. And so constantly you're readjusting yourself all the time, and the result of that is that most of the time, the peak activity around the album for us happens not during release, but, you know, half a year or a year later, when we've gotten more new fans and the older fans know what to do and they've taken the time with the album. Because most of the time when we put out a new album, it's like, I hate this band now. and then they come back to it, you know?
That's like basically initial bullshit, that talk that usually happens when a band changes their style, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and I totally get it, man. Like, if you're into a certain style of music and you think this band is doing that really well and you listen to it and you're like, oh, this album's great, and then they come up with something else that you don't like, I totally get it. For us, I think our core fan base, or whatever you want to call that, they just perhaps more so like our approach to songwriting or our lyrical content or our aesthetics or, you know, what we stand for, etc. And these people maybe follow us for like the long ride. And those are the people that I really appreciate also when they come to shows and they talk to us or whatever, or the stuff that I see online or the reviews and stuff. That's really cool stuff. And those have been, you know, fans have been supporting us for a very long time.
Right on.
That's great. Yeah. But it's always difficult for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I reckon that like if you're a band that has been, you know, shape-shifting, you know, for hours on end with like every new record, it's something new. People kind of get the gist of the artistic journey a band takes at a certain point, and they're probably even more intrigued to find out what the new record is going to be like.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, you would hope so.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way. Yeah.
Well, let's just say, from Neckbreak hardcore to grunge and pop, is this an active decision you guys have made? Because it kind of reminds me of the past that bands like Tidal Fight have taken. Mm-hmm. You know, is it like you're not into the hard stuff anymore?
I mean, I barely listen to that nowadays, for sure. I think most of us don't really listen to hardcore much more these days.
Right.
We might be a bit out of the loop, even, you would say. You could say. But was it an active decision? Not really. It's more like, especially seeing as this, you know, for like the songwriting itself, the initial songwriting itself comes mostly from me and Boy. And we've been experimenting with music, you know, on our own, on the side. And so you spend a lot of time at home writing songs, recording music that may or may not get released. In my case, just usually doesn't get released.
Right.
And you have all these ideas and they're very different from what you were doing with the band. And then you're suddenly writing an album for the band. And then you're like, oh, wait a second, we can get this thing. That's actually really cool. Maybe we can just use that for this song. And we can use that part for something else for Swain. And then you end up with a thing that just sounds different. It's not like we all sat down. It's like, guys, let's change our sound.
Right.
Like, nobody does that, you know, like, and it just, this is the music that came natural to us.
Right.
And, yeah. Yeah, there's never really much of a conscious thing that happens with Swain. Everything is kind of very organic. We just do things and it just happens like this, you know?
Right. Yet yeah. you guys are, on the other hand, you guys are quite, you know, you tour quite a lot and you're pretty closely related to the hardcore scene, you know, playing with mm-hmm. bands you mentioned like Touché, Modern Love is War, Dangerous, yeah. John Coffey. Would you guys consider yourself part of a scene, or do you transcend scenes and tread new waters to stay as independent as possible?
Well, when we play shows and we, like, for example, when we play, I don't know, like a show in Cologne and we play this, the Ad Set, you know, like the Autonomous Center, I feel at home there, you know, like, and I think we all do. We feel like this is an environment that I understand. These are people that I understand. This is a scene that I have been in for a very long time.
Right.
And so we still appreciate those shows and we really, really feel at home there. On the other hand, of course, it's becoming more and more difficult for us to, I don't know, play a show with a really intense hardcore act and mm-hmm. still make sense for the people that haven't seen us before. You know, they'll be like, why is this band on tour with this band? You know, it doesn't make sense or something. And I do understand, though, that nowadays that music consumption has changed and the people are definitely more open to different styles of music. You know, you grow up and you listen to Kendrick Lamar, but also you listen to a black metal band and it's all fine. So that is nice. And I think it works in our case more so for the younger audience than for an older audience. But we're not actively trying to transcend any scenes or like move into different scenes, but we're just trying to connect with as many people we can and just, you know, we're just playing shows, we're just playing music, and whoever wants to get on board, that's cool, and who doesn't, that's fine too, you know. But We'll just do our best. And
definitely. Yeah. Well, how would you describe your sound yourselves, and obviously your band ethos too? Because it strikes me that hardcore doesn't necessarily have to sound like a hardcore band, you know, like that, and punk. There's like various styles of punk, and there's even bands that would not sound punk, but they're regarded as punk. What with the ethos and all? How would you describe your sound and your band ethos?
It's a very good question. The sound, it's very difficult now. How do you describe Negative Space? Like, alt rock doesn't really cut it for me, I think. I don't really like the term grunge. I think it's more of like a thing that was a word that described a certain time and a certain place, perhaps.
True that, yeah.
What is our sound? Yeah. I think a lot of people just try like, oh, well, it sounds like, you know, it sounds like this band, sounds like that band, maybe a little bit of Radiohead, maybe a little bit of Weezer, maybe some Nirvana, whatever. Sabadoo is, you know, like the label came to us and they were like, all right, we need to have three bands that you guys sound like so we can put that on the album for fans of. And I'm like, really? You want to do this? Like, yeah, we're going to do this. I was like, okay, well, and then we had to come up with like some bands. I don't know. As an artist, you always feel like, you want to write something that is unique.
Mm-hmm.
You might not always succeed, but you want to. And you would like to think that your band can't be summarized as a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and a little bit of this.
Right.
So for me to answer that question is kind of difficult. I think other people are probably way better at that. Like, what is Swain's sound? But our ethos in terms of how do we approach stuff, yeah, we're definitely punk in that sense, or DIY, or, you know, like, we make our own music videos, we make our own artwork, we make our own shirt designs and stuff like that. We're reaching a point where maybe we would record our own album, you know, like that's something we might consider. We just recorded a demo, we recorded a cover song that we're going to be releasing later, and that's just, you know, mostly recorded at home, except for the drums.
Nice.
And that's just how we go about it, and it's kind of cool also nowadays with how things can happen. It's like, I record my part and then Boy records his part in the UK, sends it over to me. Then we record the drums somewhere. And then Stefan comes to my place and record the bass. And it's all pretty digital and pretty, you know, it's not like we get all together in the studio and we're like, we work it out for that song. No, this is all happening on WhatsApp, you know, like, and that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, and, obviously there's bands that would hate a setup like that, because you know, there's the conservative people would go, you need to be in the same rehearsal room, blah 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 blah. But Negative Space, to my mind, if that's the way that you guys have recorded it, like for and have written the stuff and arranged it, that definitely is proof to me and evidence enough that, you know, that is, it's also possible to arrange and write a record when you're not in the same room at the same time.
Yeah, it has its benefits and downsides, obviously. I mean, the nice thing about being able to record at home, so we had the whole album demoed beforehand, basically.
Yeah.
And that was all done at home. And then we went into the studio to get together and actually record it mostly live and then add backing tracks on top and like layers. The album is the album, and we're happy with it, and that's cool. But on the other hand, of course, we also wished in retrospect that we had a little bit more time to get together to think about the songs before we entered the studio.
Right.
So like, some things would have been different if we had more time. It's more like, this is just how it is right now for us.
Mm-hmm.
We're not together, all of us at the same place. Yeah, we just have to record it.
Right.
So this is how we do it. And then maybe we'll do it very differently next time, for sure. We had some talks about it, and we definitely want to try some different approaches.
Right on. So do you think that new environments, like moving into a new city, has a creative impact on your art? And also, do you think that it probably might even be helpful for your style that you guys are living so far away from each other, that like everybody sort of like has their own surroundings and their own kind of ingredients that they add to the recipe?
Yeah, that's an interesting point of view. Like, I don't necessarily think that let me put it this way, like, Berlin is very techno, not very rock.
Right.
So, you know, like, moving to this city has not, I haven't really met a whole lot of people that play in bands that are like, oh, listen to this, listen to that. But of course, I've met a lot of people, friends and whatever, that tell me like, oh, how have you checked out this band? Have you checked out that band? And yes, so the narratives kind of like move apart, you know, like I'm guessing boys listening to very different stuff that I'm listening to. And then when you get together and you have to write something together, then yeah, you have some other ideas perhaps. I think it worked out well, Negative Space. And it is, of course, so also that when we go on tour, we do end up sort of like synchronizing our music, so to speak, you know, like, yeah. Hey guys, if you listen to this, and then you put it up in the van, and then, you know, this is how we sort of get like a common ground of like music that we all appreciate, maybe. I think this happens in a subconscious level, perhaps more so, but it would have been nicer if everyone was close together and hanging out more. Yeah, for sure.
Right on. So Noam, what are your personal influences nowadays? Where do you draw your inspiration from?
That's a very good question. Actually, lately I've been listening to a lot of like really old jazz.
Really?
Miles Davis always. What's his name? Bill Evan, I think.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of jazz. Dave Brubeck and stuff. I got a piano recently, so I'm trying to, get my piano skills up.
Nice.
Other than that, there's a lot of like indie bands that I really like. I used to be a lot in Tame Impala, but the new stuff they're doing, I'm not really into that.
Mm-hmm.
Mac DeMarco's chill. I like Cass McCombs. A lot of those indie sort of bands. Also a lot of like strange electronic things or like experimental things that I just listen to more so to tickle the right, part of my brain or something. But the funny thing is that I don't really listen to a whole lot of music. So like when I'm at home and I'm doing a thing, I don't have music on. I find it to be very distracting.
Right,
I can only really listen to music where I'm just like sitting down. I'm like, okay, I'm listening to this now. So it doesn't happen very often.
That's funny because me and me personally, I need to have music around me like all the time because I listen to it like, even like early in the morning, late at night. I have to have it around me. But everybody has their own approach and their own needs and necessities, definitely. So, but like it occurs to me that you guys love noise, feedbacks, dirt and distortion a lot. So do you experiment a lot with sounds when recording, and or is it all thanks to Jay Robbins of Jawbox's fame getting involved in the production process and all?
I think this is more so a thing that I think is, for example, boys' influence than it is mine.
Mm-hmm.
The nice thing about being in a studio is like you got all these amps and you can really, really do things with sound that you can't do at home. Like, like at home we have a pedal board and a bunch of shit that you can use on the plugins or whatever. But it's never quite the same. Then in the studio, Jay Robbins definitely has had influence there. Mm-hmm. But I think Boy in particular has a very nice approach to like making shit sound pretty fucked up in a cool way. Yeah. And the way that I approach it is very different. Like when I record and mix my own stuff or like demos, I fuck around with the audio tracks a lot. So I sample parts that you record sometimes, and instead of like having the riff and playing the same riff four times, I just copy paste it, making it sound like it's a repeated sort of sample.
Right.
Or like pitch shifting or doing like all these digital effects to it that I really enjoy doing.
Yeah.
But that becomes a little bit more difficult when you're in a studio setup with a mixing guy. There's a few instances where we actually try to communicate like, oh, maybe we can do this thing or that thing with the digital file. And then in the studio, it's like Jay Robbins is like, okay, well, I never really do that. So this is also one of the reasons why I'm very much into the idea of just recording things myself, mm-hmm. or ourselves. Uh-huh. So we have like full freedom with like fucking with everything and just having complete creative control. But then again, the input that Jay Robbins has had on other aspects of the album recording has been so beneficial and so good that it's hard for us to imagine not working with any producer at all.
Right on. So would you say that writing and recording an album with Swain is a group effort, despite the fact that you and Boy are the main songwriters?
Well, this is getting to an interesting point because I think with The Long Dark Blue, this was more so than it was with Negative Space. And in fact, pretty much like the third day into the studio recording, we had a pretty big talk with the group where it became quite apparent that perhaps this approach was a bit more centralized than it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like those demos that we recorded were pretty... You know, I had written a bunch of drum parts and a bunch of bass lines that, you know, I should have probably given more space to the guys to come up with their own shit. Uh-huh. And I think this is just something that came out of the fact that we didn't really practice much and communicate much at the time. And so unfortunately, all that stuff happened more in the studio. It was a bit dramatic, actually, and but we resolved it in a cool way. And in the end, we were happy with the thing. So I kind of feel that probably on the next album will be a lot more everyone getting together in the practice space, and the demoing being a lot more simple. Like, hey, here's a rough guideline of a track.
Uh-huh.
Let's work it out, as opposed to, look, here's the song, and let's play it like this. So yeah, that's just the, you know, thing that we all have to sort of like adjust, I think, and me in particular, I think also.
So you, but you guys are chill, like when it comes to, you know, arguing and discussing shit. It's not like you're having heated discussions, or is it?
Not anymore.
Right.
But it, like that in the past, definitely way more. And in the studio also, it's not very pretty sometimes.
Right.
Really. But on the other hand, I think that's also because we all really care about it. And, yeah, so sometimes it does get really personal, but I mean, we're all in our 30s now, so we're pretty reflective on our, I'd like to think we're pretty reflective on our communication styles and stuff like that. And we give feedback to each other. And recently we had actually a pretty long conversation about a few things. And I think that went quite well. And we definitely aired some grievances in the way that we communicate and made some changes. And I think that's necessary. If you're a band for this long, like me and Boris have been playing in bands together for well over 15 years now, I think, like back in high school. So, you know, you can't make it work if you can't communicate with each other. It's the most basic thing. I mean, you must know.
Yeah, I mean,
you
know, yeah.
You've been around with this stuff for a while, so long now, right?
Yeah, the Dunos have been together for like 25 years now. And we only, the only lineup changes that we had were in the first year. So basically we're like an old wed couple. And yeah. You know, you know, having a good sense of respect towards each other you know, trying to find out what everybody needs and what they hate is crucial to, you know, to being a long running band. But I mean, you must know what it's like. So I could describe every person, like everybody's personality in our band, like distinctively. Mm-hmm. Is it the same for you and Boyd? Like, do you guys know each other so well that there's no well-kept secrets anymore?
Yes and no, in the sense that I think sometimes you think that that's the case, you know, but maybe it's not, especially when you're not living together in the same city, for example. You know, people change, and that change maybe isn't on your eyes very clearly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, I think this is something that we realized recently, that maybe we have become different people, and that maybe some of the stuff that we were thinking about the other person was more projection than it was anything else. Yeah. How's that for you guys, though? Like, you guys all live in the same city, right?
No, we don't. Like, me and Aiko, a drummer, we're living in Cologne, and the rest is living in Münster and Ibbenbüren, which is basically where we're from. Okay. So we get together, like, with, like, sort of this, we have this one band day per week where we get to meet in our studio and do shit or just have a phone conference or whatnot. But things have gotten a lot more difficult when it comes to logistics and shit ever since we have 7 band kids nowadays. So you know, that totally determines, you know, your whole daytime. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that era when the band gets kids, everything changes, right? I guess.
Yeah, but you know what? I wouldn't doom it. It's brilliant to have kids. It's the it's really it's a beautiful thing. It just you know, it determines other stuff a lot more. But that comes naturally, and that's definitely, you know, it's a given. Just have to deal with that.
Yeah, I've already made up my mind. I'm not having any kids. Me and my partner, we already decided.
You know,
we're getting to that point also where you have to make that decision. So
having kids is just as beautiful as making kids. It's brilliant. I can only recommend it. So, being in a band that has moved a lot and lives in different places, it takes a lot of organizing. Do you guys have a certain structure or hierarchy in the band when it comes to logistics and planning in general?
Hierarchy is probably not the right term, but we have a sort of like a natural way of going things that we all sort of like grew into. So I do a lot of the email communication with the label, with everything, mostly. Stefan is in particular really good at the paperwork recently, so that's really nice.
You're going to have one of those people too.
No, but it really helps because he speaks German and our German is not great. So, for example, recently we got a subsidy for the album, uh-huh. And I'm pretty sure that I wouldn't have been able to pull that off in my shitty German, or any of us really. So that's really like something that Stefan is good at, you know. And Boy is doing all the art related stuff, so the artwork for the shirts and the designs for the album.
Right.
And Boris is, you know, with his tour management experience and all that stuff, he's really good at getting things done. You know, just actually getting things done.
Right.
So that's a pretty good distribution at the moment. Mm-hmm. And we all just sort of like, you know, everyone just does a thing that they're good at, and then this just happens to be the distribution of things.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So you got signed to Endhits Records in 2016, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, 15, 16. Yeah, the album got released in September 16, so I think we signed. Yeah, signed isn't a big word. There was no contract, obviously.
Okay, so how did... How did that contact come about? Like, how do you know Oiza?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't remember how I know Oiza.
that's all thanks to your partying skills.
I used to smoke a lot of weed, so I blame it on that. Oiza. From my memory, so Oiza's just always been there, and I know Oiza. And then at some point, we just reached out to him with this, and he was stoked. And this is just how things go for Swain. We're just like, oh, I don't know, let's ask this guy, and then it works. You know?
Are you guys careful on the choice of labels and people you work with?
Well, yes and no. I mean, we have said no to a few things, mm-hmm. For sure. In particular, I don't really care how big a label is. I just want the person to work there to really care.
Right.
Yeah, same with booking agencies or press teams or whatever. I really don't care how big you are, as long as you are really dedicated and, you know, somewhat capable.
Right.
For Oiza, the somewhat capable is very capable, because Oiza is just the best fucking person in the world.
He's going to be delighted to hear that. But I can only reassure you that that's true, because we've been working together with Oiza for a long time. He's doing, you know, all the production work for the Do Nots, and, you know, he's just been a good friend for ages already. So, he's the best. So... What, to your mind, what is the most striking feature about Endhits Records as a label?
That's a very good question. The willingness to put up with our shit. because really, we are sometimes quite a mess, and Oiza somehow manages to deal with it. I think it's just a certain amount of dedication and... That is pretty rare,
right?
With labels, and also the interesting thing about Endhits Records is like the DIY sort of like mindset with the highly professional approach.
Right on.
You know, so you have Oiza, who is a punk kid who, you know, goes on tour with Parkway Drive, with Casper, with you guys as well, or is he just doing production?
Yeah,
exactly. And then so obviously you're in this field with highly professional people doing very capable things. And then also you're working with, you know, all these smaller bands. And so you have this like DIY mindset and this completely capable team that's helping you out with that. And I think that's a really cool combination, because it also makes it so easy for us to communicate with him or with anyone in the group there. That's to me a perfect setup, you know. Like there's no bullshit on like you can't play this show, or you can't do this, or the song needs to be more like this. Like there's none of that. It's like you guys do what you want, and we're gonna try to make this work.
Brilliant.
And that's great for a band, you know. Like it's ideal.
Are you guys talking on a regular basis? How closely in touch are you with the label family?
I think me and Oiza in particular communicate a lot. So me and Oiza text on Telegram quite frequently. We get in the phone call. We email a lot, so like I think that connection is definitely me and Oiza a lot. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to do that for, I don't know how you guys do it, but like, you know, as a whole band, to communicate with the label is difficult for the label, but also for the band, you know, because so sometimes that communication just has to happen, like, you know, a bit more centralized. How's that for you guys? Do you just have just one person getting in touch with the label or with
Well, our guitarist is also our manager, so he does a lot of that stuff. But everybody in our band totally has their own job to do within the band structure. So it works out, you know, magnificently well. And I really don't have a clue how and why, because everybody just found their place in the whole structure. Yeah. But you know, as long as it works, who am I to bother? You know.
And so how does it, I mean, like, I don't know if this was more meant to be like an interview or a conversation, but if I can ask you a question.
No, definitely. Like, you can ask me anything.
Yeah. So like, how do you guys deal with it? For example, when your guitar player / manager tells everyone, like, we have to do X or Y, you know, like, does he give you guys, like, we got to do this? Or like, how does that work?
Well, you know, for one, it's definitely a trust thing. We trust each other like blindly these days. You know, the second thing is that we tried out like various managers, and we found out that we are best when we represent ourselves. And so Alex is the only guy who doesn't drink in our band, which probably helps him get up early in the morning and, you know, basically plan shit and all. And he just does it so well that, you know, there's no question. But definitely we sit down and talk until everybody in the band has a good feeling and has a smile on their face. And we'd rather turn out every business offer, be it a very, very, I don't know, like financially positive one, if only one person in the band has a bad feeling about it. And that sort of keeps everything like healthy and feet on the ground, which is good, I think.
That's cool. Yeah, that's good to know.
Yeah.
I can relate to that in many sense, I think, where so, we do the same thing. It's like, you know, unless it's like really important, we just do it and we can overrule maybe some other, but everyone gets to have a say and everyone just says yes or no. And then, yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, yeah, that's cool.
So Oiza, I've been talking to Oiza about End Hits Records a bit, and he told me that if there's a creed behind the label, then it's probably that End Hits Records is a political label without being outspoken political. Would you guys describe yourselves as political people as well?
I think that varies amongst everyone in the band. I would consider myself highly political. Uh-huh. I don't think we are a political band. I think we all have very strong political opinions for sure. And I think they're all also pretty well aligned with each other.
Yeah.
So, but we never really felt that Swain was the right vehicle for, you know, expressing those ideas.
Do you think it's enough to just be a musician these days? Like, what with the way that, you know, the world has changed and the streak everything has taken these days? Like, what do you do beside the band activities, like both political and personal? Are you trying to, I don't know, like, do you get involved in like, say, I don't know, like charity stuff and like socially, like just doing something helpful to make this world a better place too?
Well, with the risk of sounding like a, like this sounding like a cop out, but I'm a big fan of microactivism in the sense of like, you know, inspiring or engaging with people around you.
Right.
I think you have a high chance, you know, to reach out to people that are close to you, or like people at work is a really good example, where you're at a job where there's all these different kinds of people with different kinds of attitudes. Mm-hmm. And then, for example, I remember this situation where a couple of years ago I was working with this guy who was flat out racist, really, and he was saying like, oh, you know, like, Turkish people in he was coming from Belgium, like all these Turkish people, Moroccan people in Belgium, like they just steal shit and blah, blah, blah. And so I took the time after a while to just actually, you know, have a conversation with him about this stuff and really get to the bottom of like why he was feeling like that. And we had, I think, a very meaningful conversation where I felt that maybe he actually learned something. And that to me is a valuable political interaction.
Do you think you know, that's really true? That like talking to Nazis maybe wins them over? Because from my experience,
Nazis,
it's tough.
Is a very, yeah, of course. I mean, if somebody is an actual Nazi, you're not going to convince them otherwise really quickly, obviously.
Right.
But I think, and this is, I think, a general trend that's happening right now, for example, in the U.S., where we are using words to describe other people, and with that we are creating this sort of like binary spectrum of good and evil. Mm-hmm. And so we're pushing each other away and we're removing any opportunity for a dialogue.
Right.
And so I mean, I understand, of course, that, you know, in Dresden and stuff, that's different. You have actual Nazis there, and it's a very fucking different situation. But there are a lot of people, and I would say the majority of people, fall, you know, very delicately in a spectrum between being slightly racist or maybe not, or, you know, having left or right wing ideas. And so I think it's very important that we all just communicate with each other.
Yeah.
And to the extent that we can. And of course, there's a point where you can't, and then there's other stuff that you can do, to which I subscribe a little bit less, personally. But I do understand that it's necessary.
Right on.
But yeah, microactivism. And I think for me, and I think also as a band, you were saying, like, is this enough as a musician to not be political? That's a very good question. I think if you look now at what's happening in popular music, or let me put a different word, relevant music. I think the relevant music right now is done by people who are talking or are embodying more topical things, like, you know, being genderqueer, or, you know, things about feminism in general. Also, you know, talking about the subject of race,
right?
In the United States in particular. So I think those are more relevant bands politically, for sure, than we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do we do? Well, we do go on stage, and on stage we do talk a lot about things.
That's good.
Yeah, but yeah, we don't. I don't think politics really, like, embodies our, or we don't really embody politics in our identity really as a band. Yeah, I don't know if we should, but this is just doesn't something that we didn't naturally gravitate towards that.
Right on. Well, let's talk about getting on stage then. The End It's Records tour is coming up. So, do you know the other artists, like all of them?
No, actually. I mean, I know of them. I never met them. I met Nathan.
Right.
Yeah. That's all I know, really. I've listened to Norbert and Matze, for sure. And I'm really stoked to do this.
Right.
Also, this is the first time we're getting into a Nightliner, so this is like a huge bucket list.
Do you think there's a chance of you being the band that gets lost on tour because you party too hard in some shady club afterwards?
No, if I understand correctly, Oizo might be coming, so I'm sure we'll be reined in. And you know, bus call at one. And then, but we'll see. We'll try to be, we'll make it the most habitable situation for everyone.
Right. So what can we expect from your show then? I mean, since you have a hardcore background and sort of a shoegaze touch to the newer stuff, are you guys playing old and new material, or do you focus on the Negative Space stuff mainly?
We mainly focus on Long Dark Blue and Negative Space.
Right.
Howl is quite far removed from what we do now, I think. There's one song, Asleep, that we sometimes still play. That is about it, though.
Mm-hmm.
There's also this thing, though, you know, like, you're playing shows and you see that people respond way more to the new stuff than to the old stuff, so you naturally just go like, all right, well, let's play the new stuff, you know, like, that's cool.
Right.
So what can you expect? A set with a lot of dynamics, you know, like some real quiet stuff and some real loud stuff, and that's how we like it.
Nice. Definitely try and catch you on the road. So, speaking of the road, my favorite question, and that's sort of like a thing in this podcast, is please tell me your most embarrassing tour story in short. Is there anything that you can remember that was just plain embarrassing?
Tons. But perhaps maybe not so... not something we really want to share. Let me think. embarrassing. Well, I had my pants fall down once on stage, but that's a long, long time ago. Like a really long time. And my pants just fell off my. I was in my underwear. But that's a really long time ago. That stuff doesn't really happen. I bought belts since then.
Just riddle me this: were drugs involved when that happened?
No, not at all. I can tell you an embarrassing, but this is all really old stuff. Like, I think nowadays we don't really have a lot of like really embarrassing stuff. But I do remember this one show. I sure hope my mom isn't listening. But I was playing a show in Amsterdam. I gotta say, this is like before Boy was part of the band and Stefan was part of the band, but this was with Boris, and we had done some speed the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate speed, I gotta say, I really, really hate speed, but at the time, that you're young and that's like cool. And then we were really fucked up. And so I decided to do some speed before the show. And I just remember like not remembering the lyrics. And during the song, while Boris was drumming, I would walk up to him and ask him like, dude, what are the lyrics? And it was just all like, you know, and that was very embarrassing for sure. There's a few instances where we've played shows where everything just gets so, we just play so shitty that, but this is more in the past, fortunately. I think nowadays on tour, embarrassing things, not so much. If the guys have anything, I'll let you know on a more personal note, but I don't remember much, unfortunately. So I don't know if this answers your question in a satisfying way. But
yeah. Well, it does. It does to a certain extent, but I'm pretty sure we'll get to the bottom of everything at some point. But which yeah. brings me closely to the end of this podcast. I have a quick fire mm-hmm. round coming up. And the first question definitely, you know, it connects everything that we've done so far. So drinks or drugs?
Currently drinks.
Right. Coffee or tea?
Tea for me, right. For sure.
Okay. Video games or books?
Tough one. I like them both. Uh-huh. Books, but I end up playing more video games.
What do you play these days?
Oh, man, everyone's going to be like, what the fuck? But I actually, a lot of us in the band, except for one, we play a lot of Civilization 5 in particular.
Really?
Actually, like next Saturday, the guys are going to come over, and then four other people, and we're having an actual LAN party with me and my partner, and like it's going to be real cool. We have this thing on Saturday. We're just going to play this dumb video game.
Okay, that's probably the nerdiest thing I've heard in ages. Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah. That's what we're all 30-year-old. Plus, and we're coming together doing the LAN party. Yeah.
Jeez, man. I picture you guys coming back from Berghain and fucking playing Civilization for hours on end. Holy shit.
So that's kind of like seriously what I've actually done this.
Holy shit. All right. Billy Idol, Billy Talent, or Billie Eilish?
Oh, that's a very good question. Actually, Billie Eilish.
Right.
Yeah, right now for sure. When are we talking about relevance? And I think she's still quite young, and I think the songwriting can definitely improve, but I think she's a very fascinating person, and I'm actually quite inspired. And I find it really weird to be inspired by like a 17 or 18-year-old person. But I think she's really cool.
So a lot of people that feel the same way.
Yeah.
All right, final one. To burn out or to fade away?
Very good question. I think when I was young, I would have said burn out. I still say burnout.
Fair enough. So, all right, my friend. It's been a pleasure having you on this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. That's been good.
Real good
nice.
Talk. And great to get to know your band a little better. Mm-hmm. The final thing I want you to do is to line up your top five playlist at present.
Top five playlists? Like top five albums or songs?
Five albums or songs, whatever comes to your mind. Stuff that you listen to right now. Man.
I'm really bad at this kind of stuff. All right, I'm actually going to go onto Spotify right now, and I'm going to go to my albums, and I'm going to say things that I really like. All right, so this is a really strange album that probably nobody listening is going to like, but I've been listening to it a lot. It's from Christian Scott Atunde Ajua, and it's called, the album's called Yesterday You Said Tomorrow. He's got a great cover from Tom York on it. Recommend everyone listens to it.
Nice.
The new album from Big Thief is pretty cool. Two Hands. I actually really like Tom York's Anima. So there's that. I am literally just going through my recently added album. So
that's all right.
Do you want like new stuff or also old stuff?
Whatever you've got coming up for you. Like whatever strikes your mind.
Okay, so I would say Boards of Canada. Mm-hmm. And then what's that song again? What's that EP again? Oh, man. I'm really Trans Canada Highway is something I put up on the regular for sure. And then last one, let me think. It's actually kind of a difficult question.
I know it is.
Which
is why I'm asking.
Considering I don't, yeah, exactly. It's also because I just don't really listen to a whole lot of music. I just put up an album and I just listen to it over and over and over. I mean, I would still say Trouble Will Find Me from The National.
It's a brilliant album and a great choice.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right. The final question. What city are you going to move to next in order to confuse people like me even more?
I could not possibly imagine a city that I would move, that we would move more. I could not imagine a city I would like to move more in Europe other than Berlin.
Right.
If I were to move, that would probably be United States.
I see.
Not sure though. I'm pretty content where I am right now, and I think the rest of the guys are as well. Not so sure about Boy, like he's coming back to Berlin in March.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if he's going to stay or not, but it seems like he will for at least a little bit.
Right on. Noam, it's been a pleasure having you here on this podcast. Please give my best to the boys.
Likewise.
And I'll hope to catch you guys on tour. I'll switch to German now to do the outro. Please stay in the line, please. So I'll just talk to you afterwards a bit more.
Sounds good. And thanks again, man.
Yeah, thank you so much. Ja, vielen Dank euch natürlich auch fürs Zuhören hier beim Endhits Records Podcast. Wir haben gerade über die Tour gesprochen. Nathan Gray and Band, Swain, Norbert Buchmacher und Matze Rossi zusammen auf Tour. Das geht am 14.02. in Berlin los. Das geht über Münster, Köln, Frankfurt, Hamburg, Leipzig, Nürnberg, Wien, München, Zürich, Stuttgart und Saarbrücken am 25.02. Seht euch das auf jeden Fall an. Das ist eine großartige Tour. Wer weiß, vielleicht gibt es ja auch irgendwelche Kollaborationen an dem Abend von ein paar Künstlern untereinander. You never know. Was ich aber weiß, ist, dass ihr bitte alle abonniert, und zwar diesen Podcast bei Spotify, Apple, Deezer und Podigy. Beim nächsten Mal in Folge 4 wird es dann, glaube ich, den wunderschönen Norbert Buchmacher geben. Da werden wir ein bisschen mehr über den herausfinden. Hinterlasst uns bitte Feedback auf Endhits Records Facebook und Insta oder schickt mir doch einfach mal einen Brief. Mir schickt einfach heutzutage keiner mehr Briefe. So ein Liebesbrief. Ich kriege nur Rechnungen. Das kann wirklich nicht sein. Da muss ein Ruck durch dieses Land gehen. Liebe Leute, ich bin der Ingo von den Donuts. Das war der Endhits Records Podcast Nummer 3. Ich freue mich auf die nächste Episode. Herzlichen Dank fürs Zuhören. Und immer dran denken, wenn man Brunnenkresse auf dem Tisch ausgibt, dann sieht das manchmal aus wie das Obituary-Logo. Aber das ist nur Food for Thought. Tschüss.